Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 94 of season 11 of Movie Review at the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Heather Baxendale of Word of Hellmouth. Welcome back to the show, Heather.
Thank you for having me back. I love it here.
Yeah, I like having you back, too. So thank you very much for agreeing to come back and talk about Band of Brothers with me.
Of course. Thank you for giving me the motivation to do the rewatch.
You're very welcome. You don't need
and leaving me fetal on my floor multiple times this week.
You don't need my motivation because I know from the past that I've recommended things and you don't watch them. So I don't know whether I'm supposed to be happy that this time you did or didn't. I don't know.
Be happy. I always get to things. It's just sometimes it takes me a really long time.
Okay, fair enough.
Really, it's true. It does. Sometimes it takes me years to get to stuff. My brother and I are the same way with books. I have Devil Dogs here, and it's been sitting here for about 8 months. And my intention was to read it right away. He's had my Bourne trilogy for about 7 years. It should be his now. But I know he'll get to it when he's ready to
Isn't
get to it.
Isn't possession 9/10 of the law or something like that?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. Do you have siblings?
Of course I do. I have 6 siblings.
Oh. Oh, wow. That's impressive. Okay.
No,
well,
we're a bit about family.
My brother.
We're a blended family.
Oh, that's still crazy cool. I just have my brother. And, you know, I adore my brother. We have borrowed each other's stuff to the point where we've asked each other, is this yours or is this mine? I don't know anymore. Between the three of us or the two of us, we have like 3 copies of The Hobbit and we don't know which ones belong to who or how we ended up with 3. Yeah, we have this like exchange thing to where we forget that we've even given each other stuff. There are times where I message him and say, did I give you this? Because I want to have this and I don't have it here. But if you have it, I'm not going to get it because it might be mine. I don't know.
Yeah, you're supposed property. To write your name in it.
I actually have a stamp to put my name in my books. And as Rob can see, I have a little mini library here. Every room in my house has books. I have an obscene amount of books. I remember about half the time to stamp them. But I always end up giving a bunch away, too. I loan them out, but I also give them away.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, books are meant to be shared.
That is true. All right, so episode 94 begins with Lipton continuing his update and ends with the convoy moving along. So basically, we left things off yesterday with the men being placed in a convent in Rochamps and getting this young choir to serenade them. And, you know, they do a nice job of passing through the group of men, see the different faces and things like that. So we get an idea of who it is, you know, all these guys that are there. And they do something really interesting that we're going to find out very shortly about how they do it. But it's just very cool. So Lipton continues with his narration and he goes, Hitler had launched a counteroffensive in Alsace and we were bound for the town of Haguenau to help hold the line. But at least for that night, we didn't know it yet. That night, we were okay. I spent part of the night trying to come up with a roster for the company to see who we had left. We'd come into Belgium with 121 men and officers, plus 24 replacements. That's 145 total. We were going out with 63. I mean, that's just unbelievable, those numbers. You know?
Yeah.
So, wow.
Well, that's the thing that and once again, this is, I think I actually messaged my brother. I was messaging my brother the whole time I was watching this with live action reactions, which he enjoyed. But one of the comments, and I think it was in part 7 and maybe even at the end here where I said, I feel like this should be mandatory to watch in school and at a certain age and an appropriate age, of course. I think I've mentioned to you before that I watched Schindler's List when I think I was 10. And again, I think that should be a mandatory viewing also. Correct. Age appropriate. But absolutely a mandatory viewing. And I'm going to bring it back to kind of what we were talking about a little bit on the last episode with we as a people are exposed to so much violence, so much sensationalism of it, a lot of exploitation of it. And I don't think for your average person that they actually understand what really happens in true war and what sacrifices look like, how arbitrary it can be, how these men have to go through everything that they do, and even the ones that survive, the burden of surviving, and all of these complications of emotions and things that they have to go through. They don't have time to process any of this trauma. And right here, like we have this moment of peace, but it's not really peace because they're already thinking about going
Right, but
on to the
they
next
don't.
thing
What Lipton says is they
after.
don't know. They think they're going to be taken off the line now. That's the thing.
But we know that they're not. but overall, at this point, up to this point, that is what they've thought. Is okay. Well, we have another mission after this, or they don't know that one's coming, and that's almost worse. I feel like thinking that you're done and then hearing that you have more. I think they cover that very well in part eight, thinking that you're done, and thinking that the worst is over, and it's not. So this moment here where you feel like things have paused. It gives you the time to reflect. Yes, you're getting numbers. You're getting numbers.
Right.
But those numbers are
That's right.
people. Those numbers are people. And watching them lose and how they've lost people that have mattered to them. And even in this moment, them not 100% knowing if their friends, if their brothers have lived, survived, or been seriously wounded. I mean, to live in
Right.
that constant state is. It's
That's true,
insane,
because
is what
there are guys
it
that have been
truly
wounded that are
is.
not there, and they don't know what's happened to them. It'll take a while for them to get some sort of confirmation as to what happened to those guys.
So even in these moments of supposed impasse, either they're wondering what are we going to next, or reflecting what you've lost, or being so exhausted from it all that. I mean, like Lipton, I love Lipton for this part. I love that he's our narrator for this part. I think he's really, really good at observing everything, but he's a solid guy. He's a very solid guy, which is why a lot of them, I think, look to him. But he's also not over the top like Spears, who's going to go out there and be the wild, crazy guy who's going to do all this stuff. But Lipton is the guy you can rely on. And that pragmatism that he carries and that ability to be there as someone that they can all look to and rely on. I think in this moment you really, really see and feel, I certainly did, the burden of it,
Sure.
the weight of it.
And they do it really well. I mean, what always amazes me about this scene here in the church is that, in Saving Private Ryan, we also had a scene in the church. So it's did they decide to do a scene? I mean, in the book it does mention they spent the night in the church. So the question is, in Saving Private Ryan, did Robert Rodat think of making the scene in the church based on him knowing about this, that type of thing. So yeah, it's very poignant what they do here, because they show all the guys in the pews, and then they start he Lipton's narration starts talking about the various men, and as he talks about each one, they just fade away, which is an amazing effect shot, the way that they do this. He's just mentioned the numbers that they've lost, what is it, 82 guys, in the course of 4 months, something like that, maybe even less, since they're in Belgium. So no, actually, I think they entered Belgium maybe the beginning of December. So it's only about a month and a half or whatever it is, but they lost a lot of guys in Bestone. And he goes, Garnier was badly wounded and Hubler died accidentally. And you see, the character of Garnier, and then he disappears as he says that. And then you see Hubler, and he also disappears, as he says that. And he goes, Joe Toy had lost his leg. And then he disappears. Now, what's really interesting is he says Garnier was badly wounded and Joe Toy had lost his leg. But the same thing happened to Garnier. So it's very interesting the way that he differentiates and how he describes both.
Oh, and Garnier, he lost his because of Toya, which that was one of those fetal moments. But yeah, this is exactly why I feel
Yes.
like you should be required to watch this in school. So instead of just reading numbers in a history book and not emotionally
Right.
connecting to the fact that those were people that lost their lives, and yes, they were fighting for a good reason, but they still were just gone like that. The fragility of it, the fragility of life, and the sacrifice of what war costs us. That was some, and I think this so well too. It's all of these men were somebody's son, somebody's
Right.
brother, potentially somebody's father, husband. They were
And
someone
not just that, they were
to
friends to
somebody,
these men,
to many somebodies.
or close confidants, or however you want to look at
Exactly.
it. I mean, that's why, that these guys were really, really close, especially all the Tekoa guys.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think, and I know you'll be talking about it on coming episodes, but I think that's in, the future where you see replacements come in and that they're regarded
Yes.
differently. Even though they've been there or they've been recovering in the hospital, they are regarded
That's right.
differently. It's because they haven't been standing side to side with them this entire
Exactly.
time.
Next week we'll be talking about Webster. So yeah.
Webster's great.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be good.
And then he continues, giving us a recount of things that happened. And he goes, among the dead were Heron, Mellett, Swasco, Kenneth Webb, Harold Webb, Alex Pincala, and Skip Monk. And as he's going through all these names, the guys disappear, once again. And it's nice again seeing a friend of the show, Alex Sabga Brady, when he disappears as Mellett sitting there. I like the tidbit that when he spoke to me a while back and told me about, what happened is that once his character died, which, he just died in yesterday's episode, he was still there in the background scene, as a generic soldier. So it's fun to see that his character disappears here. His face disappears, but over the next three episodes, three parts of this miniseries, we're still going to be able to see him. So, or he's still there. You can't necessarily see him, but he's there. And then he continues with his narration. He goes, our month in Belgium costs us one good officer, Buck Compton. And we see a shot of Buck as he disappears. And one bad one, Norman Dyke. And we see Dyke disappear. Now, what's really cool is most of the guys are just sitting there, staring basically at the screen as they're disappearing. But Dyke, did you notice what Dyke is doing? He's
No,
like
what is he
looking at his
doing?
ring or shining his ring at the time, which is pretty funny.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I'm playing it back right now. You're right.
All these guys are just staring there, whatever. And but Dyke, he's playing with his ring.
Yep.
Which,
Yeah, he's not, yeah.
again, it shows what type of person Dyke was, from at least from this perspective. I mean, I know that Graham said that one of his regrets of this episode is that he used Dyke's name instead of just making that character an amalgam of other names and other characters, so that it wouldn't hurt the family. By seeing this type of thing.
Yeah, I thought about that. I actually thought about that too, of whether or not, because I went and looked him up a bit afterwards to see about him, and I found, yeah, he was one of the real people there. I mean, I get it because of the desire to keep things as authentic as possible, and as true as possible, but yeah, but I respect the fact that he can admit after this time that perhaps that wasn't the
Right.
best choice too.
Right. Okay.
I get it. I get it. But Because it still would have impacted the story exactly the same way if viewers didn't know. And then there's going to be people like me and you who want to know more details about the real people. So, yeah, we're going to be like that prick.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, that is what I was thinking. I don't like the guy.
That's right.
People died because of him. And people
But
suffered
again,
because of
it's part
him.
of what made it
And
happen.
he
Exactly.
is responsible for that. Exactly. And yeah, so I don't begrudge him for keeping his name in it and true, but I really respect the fact that he felt like maybe that's
Again,
something
I
he
feel
should
for
have
the
done and
family from that
apologized
perspective.
for it.
But again, you know, that
Yeah,
if the guy
yeah.
really did act that way and did do those things, then, you know, you know, they say you shouldn't speak ill will of the dead, but still, you know, he possibly, you know, caused a lot of problems. So, you know, yeah.
I mean, we have no problem pointing fingers at the enemies for the things that they've done wrong. I think it's just as important to take accountability for the choices that we've made too, as individuals or a collective. I mean, that's how we change and do better.
Correct.
So yeah. I'm sorry for his family, but if this was an accurate depiction of him, I don't feel bad for him and his legacy. He
Right.
shouldn't have a good
Again,
legacy.
I don't know the, you know, I don't know how accurate it was. Because again, one of the things that we've talked about a lot is you know, when Ambrose was sitting down with all these guys and getting their stories, it was 50 years on. So, you know,
Yeah.
how 100% accurate and their memories have been, and how far were they from being real and stuff. I mean, again, there's no way of knowing.
No. This is the best we're going to get.
Right. Exactly.
Which is why it's important to preserve the story as best we can in this form of entertainment.
Correct. But again, it's you need to have these type of things here. Where not everyone is necessarily good for the men. You know, that's part
Yeah.
of the
Yeah.
problem here.
100%.
You know, there's not much, you know, and there's not much that can be said about that. Because of the way that Dyke acted, that's what helped eventually give them spears. So that's part of it also.
Exactly.
So yeah, there's no way of you know, you can't dilute it too much, I guess you can say, from that perspective.
Yeah. Like I said, I respect the choice to keep his name, and I also would have respected if they chose not to do that. And I understand that maybe they've decided because of the memory and the family later that maybe it wasn't the best choice. I don't know. I don't think there always has to be a right or wrong choice in certain situations
Right.
like this. It's the best one you can make
Exactly.
in the
I mean,
moment.
one of the things that it says in the book, you know, about Dyke, so it says on page 173, Fink agreed with the decision and the meeting ended. Lieutenant Foley also agreed. He wrote, "We were glad to see Dyke leave, not only because he failed the first platoon, but even back in the woods when the second platoon was hit with those tree bursts, it was evident that Foxhole Norman wasn't meant to be our CO. It quickly became clear that Spears was. Indeed, he had already demonstrated that in the rush on Foy." So again, they knew that you know, that
Yep.
they made the right decision with this. Same thing with, you know, going back to the whole thing with Sobel, you know, how he even Sink knew that Sobel
Yes.
wasn't gonna be able to lead the men and he needed to get rid of him. But because Sobel was still a very good training officer, you know, he still needed to find something useful for him.
Exactly. And I thought that was the right compromise. I mean, he was a bit of a nasty SOB, but he did train them to be prepared for, I mean, as prepared as I imagine you can be to go into what they did and what they faced. And it's part of the reason
That's correct.
why
Of course.
they were as successful as they were, Easy Company in particular. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And it was the right move to not send him with them because all of that work and that effort that. And also, if you don't have trust in your CO, everything's going to fall apart. I mean, part of the reason that they all were the way they were is because they trusted each other. They knew the man on their left and the man on their right was going to have their back and that they would be there for them. You have the guy who's leading you not be able to do that or make those same sacrifices, then also his judgment is compromised. If he's not willing to go out and do the same things that he's asking his soldiers to do, then he's not really objective in making those decisions for them.
That is correct. That's very true. And I think that that's a big part of it. You know, because you see the way that Winter's led, you see the way that Spears led. So,
Well, and
you
we
know,
even see the difference in Nixon throughout the entire series, which
correct.
you'll get into later as well, the results of him not getting his hands as dirty. But I think Nixon led very differently than Dyke did as well. So,
Yeah, for sure.
yeah.
For sure. No question about that. And I mean, right, it's also great how, you know, Lipton says, you know, we 1 month in Belgium, our month in Belgium cost us one good officer, Compton, and one bad one, Norman Dyke. And then he goes, oh, you gained a good one in the end. So I guess we came out ahead.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they just call Spears a good officer, as opposed to something a little more than that. What can you do?
Well, he's not a
And
man.
then,
He's not a man of many words either.
no.
Just
Well, we're about to find out. We're about to find out that he is, but much more
more.
than we
Yeah, but
thought.
in general, he doesn't engage with the guys socially in the same way everybody else does. He's always there, he's always present, but he's not always actively engaging with everybody. I feel like the camaraderie and connection for him is there. I just think it's different.
Right. Okay. Understandable. And then Spears looks at Lipton, you know, during his narration, interrupts his narration and goes, what is it? Lipton goes, ah, nothing. He goes, well, I better get back to the battalion before they disappear. Then he looks at him and goes, you want to ask me, don't you? He goes, let's go out, sir. You want to know if they're true or not? The story's about me. And then he, you know, Lipton just keeps staring at him and goes, you ever notice with stories like that? Everyone says they heard it from someone who was there. But then when you ask that person, they say they heard it from someone who was there. Nothing new, really. I bet if you went back 2,000 years, you'd hear a couple of centurions standing around and yakking about how Tertius lopped off the heads of some Carthaginian prisoners. Well, maybe they kept talking about it because they never heard Tertius deny it. Well, maybe that's because Tertius knew there was some value to the men thinking he was the meanest, toughest son of a bitch in the whole Roman legion. And he goes, sir? And he goes, these men aren't really concerned about the stories. They're just glad to have you as our CO. They're happy to have a good leader again. So, I mean, this is a great conversation that the two of them are having here. And
Yeah.
the thing that jumps the most out at me is the fact that Spears mentions Tertius. You know,
Well, we
because
find out, it's later we find out he's very educated.
yes,
Yeah,
but still,
yeah.
it's not something I would have expected.
No, I didn't either. But he has that mystery to him, and up to this point, he's very mysterious. He's more like he's the most mythological of all of the men, I think, at this point. And we see it in the way that they talk about him. And he acknowledges it here. You know, he's like, well, why should I correct them? Maybe it's good if everybody thinks I'm a scary SOB. It's not gonna hurt me. And he's a good guy and he's gonna do everything he can for them. So he shows that he's there for them through his actions rather than his words. And yeah. Being scared of him isn't necessarily a bad thing. They respect him. And not just because of that. And not just because of those stories.
That's very true. But I just like the way, you know, that he just matter-of-factly says it.
Yeah. He's totally offhanded about all of it. He's very indifferent, and I think that's what makes it so interesting, right? He's like, I'm just here doing what I'm supposed to do. Like, this is no big deal. Like, out of everybody, he is the one who I think appears. I don't believe that he is, but he appears to be the most unaffected. I think about Eric Bana's character in Black Hawk Down.
Okay.
They're not similar as far as their personalities are concerned, but I think in their demeanor and the way that they approach everything, it's like All right, I'm here. This is my job, and this is what I'm doing. And there's almost it's not a disconnect. It's just this some men were built for this, and I think that Spears is one of them.
True. Now, do you know that there really is no Tertius? It's a
No,
fake.
they're so accurate with everything, and then they invented that.
That's right.
That's just too
Graham
funny.
Nox apparently invented this for this. Because Tertius means third, like the third man. And the idea here is that this is just another person. It's the anonymous figure whose reputation grew through hearsay rather than direct witness. That's the whole idea here. I actually always thought that Tertius was a real person.
I
But
did too.
apparently, that's right. And
Clever, very clever. Well done.
yes. Because it's just, again, there are discrepancies as to whether Spears really did all the things that they said he did.
Well, maybe that's what the scene was for then, to say, eh, maybe some of it's true, maybe some of it isn't. Maybe that's what the scene is. It was an acknowledgement of that.
That's the idea. And again, no one really knows 100% if it happened or didn't happen, but a lot of the men of Easy have gone on record by saying that if it did happen, I wouldn't it wouldn't surprise me. But on the other hand, they've also said I'll never judge anyone who I wouldn't judge anybody for anything they did during war,
Yeah.
because things do happen that you're not expecting. So yeah, it's interesting that that he mentions it that way. And I like the way that Lippin looks at it at Spears as the heir of being the perfect leader for Easy Company. And Spears shows how smart he is, and he responds and goes, "Well, from what I've heard, they've always had one. I've been told there's always been one, and they can count on. Let them into the Borgwalks, held them together when they had the crap shelled out of them in the woods. Every day he kept his spirits up, kept the men focused, gave them direction. All the things a good combat leader does." And then he looks at Lipton, who just is trying to figure out what he's talking about. And he goes, "You don't have any idea who I'm talking about, do you?" He goes, "No, sir." He goes, "Hell, it was you first. Spears, Native Battalion, you've been the leader of Easy Company. Oh, and you're not going to be a first sergeant much longer. First sergeant, sir, Winters put in for a battlefield commission. And Sink approves on your behalf. You should get the official nod in a few days. Congratulations, Lieutenant."
Yeah.
So again, it's very nice to see and hear this. That Lipton is getting his due from this
I
whole thing.
love and the contrast of the two personalities. Spears is, he's indifferent. He's like, yes, this is my jam. This is where I am. This is where I belong. I was born for this. Lipton is different, and the fact that he didn't consider himself for leadership and his surprise at it just shows. Whereas Spears is indifferent to it, like, yeah, that's just where I eventually landed. Yeah, okay, I do this thing. Lipton, there's a humbleness about him where he doesn't see himself as being any different than his brothers at his sides, but it really is like a big brother or big sister mentality where you look out for those around you and you feel responsibility for them, but not in like in an assigned way, as in the same way that Spears, I feel like, internally takes over, and it's his instinct to sacrifice himself to go run and do all these crazy wild things to do these things. I feel like it's the same for Lipton to look out for all of his brothers. I would imagine, I don't know about his personal background, but I would not be surprised if he's the oldest of many siblings.
Again, I know that Lipton was born in West Virginia. I'm trying to remember if I'd read anywhere about how many siblings he had.
Yeah, and he might not be, but that is definitely the energy that he gives
Was
off.
the oldest of family. When he was 10, his father was killed and his mother was paralyzed in an automobile accident. And his mother told him that he needs to be a man
There
of
you
the
go.
family. Right, but
Yep.
it doesn't
He's that
mention
guy.
anything here about how many siblings he had, but it doesn't matter. I mean, again, he became the big brother, or the parent at a very early age. So it makes sense that something.
Especially in that timeline too, for his mother to become a widow when he was that young and 100 years
Exactly.
ago almost. Yeah, him stepping into that role and at that age. Yeah. Okay, so I was
Yes,
on to something
you
then.
were. So I decided to look up to see how common it
Validation.
was for battlefield commissions like this. What do you think? You think it was common during World War II?
I feel like it more so than probably any other war because so many people perished.
That's right. You are correct. There were about 30,000 battlefield commissions that were issued between 1941 and 1945 in the field,
Yeah.
obviously. Most of the time, it helped, enlisted men and NCOs to fill immediate leadership vacancies because of the high casualty rates that happened. So yeah, it is a little more common than than one would have
That's
thought.
yeah, that's a lot. But then again, there's the amount of loss is significant as well, so.
Yes. 100%. And then the camera, just lingers a little bit on Lipton as he's taken this also in about the fact that he's now been given this position that he didn't think he deserves.
Yeah, he sure did
You know,
deserve it.
he's in charge. Yeah. Well, he doesn't think he
I
deserves it,
know. That's
but
what
we
makes
know he
him
does.
great, though.
That's right. That's right. The idea is, I've always believed that the best leaders are the people who don't see themselves as leaders. You know, and they're not actively jockeying for a leadership position, but they just get that position just because that's the way the chips fall,
Yeah.
that type of thing.
Well, I see that with him, but also Spears. And I think that's why it's interesting with the two of them having this conversation is that they are both natural leaders and they are in completely different ways.
I agree. Definitely agree. And at this point, basically the shot changes and now we're outside and we hear we see a transport truck with the men of Easy and they're moving along not knowing where they're going, but they look back and they see a whole bunch of guys walking and one of them goes, "Hey, look, it's First Battalion." And Lusden looks at them and goes, "Hey." One of the soldiers goes, "What do you want?" He goes, "Yeah, thanks for crapping in our foxholes, you shit heads." The response is, "Hey, it's our pleasure." So just to remind anyone who might have missed it or wasn't paying attention last week, when they got back into the woods, they'd found that the guys from First Battalion had basically shit in everyone's foxholes because there was so much shelling. These guys just spent so much time in the foxholes, that's what they had to do. And
Yeah.
then Bull yells at them and goes, "Hey, enjoy the walk, boys." And then we see Luz giving Lipton a cigarette. And it's very funny because I mean we talked about this the other day that Lipton said he doesn't smoke, but after that dud nearly went off right next to him, he apparently smoked for the next I think 40 years. So
Wow.
yeah, little things like that can change a person, and so
Reasonably
we
so.
see that
Yeah,
he's.
not I don't know that that's little. But yes. Yeah, if there was something to inspire that kind of change, certainly it would be that.
Exactly. So then Luz lights up for Lipton, and then they just keep moving along, and their transport moves, and we hear someone go, "There they go, Easy Company." And as the truck continues moving into the distance, that's where this particular segment will end. So, is there anything else you wanted to mention about this particular segment?
I like that at the end here we have this after so much this entire part seven that they're and it's brief, it's 5 minutes, but we have a moment of reflection and we get to have it and it's through these two characters who are very different, but we really get the weight of what was lost, the sacrifices made. And in a way that it's not like overt or obvious either. And I think that there's something, I think that's kind of what a lot of this does though. It's not like trying to shove emotional moments down your throat. They're emotional because they're sincere. They're emotional because they're honest. They're emotional because these are real people and these were real sacrifices. And I think it's wonderful, and I think it's awful that it ever had to happen. but I'm glad that there are men like that and we're men like that in the world.
Totally agree. All right, so now we will play today's game, which is World War II movie trivia.
All right.
So we're gonna, see what trivia questions Heather is going to get randomly.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's things you've seen and know about.
Seen or in seen and at least have some less than foggy memory of. I've watched a
There you
lot of war movies.
go. Okay. All right. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay. The 1955 World War II movie, The Dam Busters, inspired what future science fiction director to think of a great way to create a bombing missile?
Science fiction. What's okay? Repeat it one more time, please.
Okay. The 1955 movie, The Dam Busters, inspired a future science fiction director to create a famous bombing scene.
Science fiction, I'm just going to go immediately just to George Lucas.
Okay, so therefore, what is the answer to
Star Wars.
Star Wars? There you go.
I'm thinking of bombing the Death Star.
Exactly. So they did it in World War II. Why can't they do it in a galaxy far, far away?
Was I right?
Yes, you were.
Yay! Okay, I got one right. Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm just trying to think of like strategy and tactical stuff and without having seen that movie or actually having any knowledge. So that was just a guess.
Well, hold on. It's not always something that's completely out in left field.
No, that was what I would call an educated guess. It was based on knowledge that I have putting information together. I don't know that I'll do it again. We'll see.
All right. Here's the one that I think you're gonna know. In the movie Saving Private Ryan, how does Jackson die?
Brig. I just watched this last year with you.
We not just we didn't just watch it, we talked about this particular scene.
Was this one of the ones in the up in the sniper? Because I can't remember their
Okay,
names. But
Jackson is the sniper. Yeah.
oh yeah, he dies up in the sniper tower. He gets blown up by the tank that slowly turns. Or maybe it wasn't a tank. It was a
It was a tank. It was a tank. A tank shoots.
it is it
A
was a
tank
tank. Yep,
shoots
tank.
the bell tower. Yes.
Yeah, after he does all the work. Barry Pepper
That's
played
right.
him, right? Yeah. Yeah, it was explosion.
All
It
right,
was
so
bad.
let's spin the wheel for your third question. You see, you're doing better than you thought so far.
Yes, thank you. I need a little help, but I'm getting there.
The captain of a convoy of ships trying to get across the Atlantic in the movie Greyhound?
Oh, I have no idea. I've never seen it.
Came out in 2020.
I haven't seen it. I know I haven't seen it. I have
Okay.
no idea. And all I remember is that Tom Hanks
So
was in
who
it.
played the captain? Tom
Tom
Hanks. There
Hanks?
you Heather,
Get there a
seriously.
little
All right, let's spin the wheel for your fourth question. You see, so far you're over 50%. So there you go. You've passed. You have a passing grade so far.
Hooray!
Okay, in the 2001 film, in the 2001 film Pearl Harbor, who played Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle?
Oh, frig. I haven't seen that since it came out because I don't enjoy it. But I'm going to guess Ben Affleck
Nope, it's
because I
not Ben Affleck.
remember that
He
he's
is
in
in
it.
it, but he does not play Doolittle.
Okay.
He plays
I don't
a
know then.
junior pilot. This is a senior pilot who has a relatively small role, but he's a part of the second half of the movie.
I feel like I'm going to start mixing up war movies with this one now and think like Robert De Niro was in it
No,
and he wasn't. I'm thinking of Men something, Men of Honor. And now I'm thinking of Cuba Gooding Jr. in it. See, now I'm meshing them
No,
together.
it's not them. It's not them.
Was Ewan McGregor in it? Ewan McGregor wouldn't be a senior
No.
officer if he was. Nope. See, I've got nothing on this one. And
Okay.
I've seen this movie, but
Okay.
I don't
Someone
like.
who played Jack Ryan. Does that help?
Oh, well, that's Alec Baldwin and Harrison Ford. And, well, eventually, John Krasinski does. Is it Alec Baldwin?
Yes, it is. Very good.
I don't even remember him being in
Yeah.
it. I knew it wasn't Harrison Ford,
Okay.
and John Krasinski was too young.
And Ben Affleck also plays
Yes.
plays Jack Ryan. And so
Yes, he
does Chris
does. And
Pine.
the Sum of All Fears. He does too, right? He did the Sum of All Fears,
Yes.
and I think he did one more.
No, he only did one. And Chris Pine also did one where he played the character.
Oh,
But
he did.
yes.
He did.
All right, so let's spin the wheel for your fifth and final question. And so far you've gotten four of them. So I'm very impressed, Heather. Very impressed.
Thank you. I've had some help too. I appreciate it.
That's okay. What's wrong with feeling a little bit of
Nothing.
help? Okay. The 2016 film The USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage, tells the story of a crew of a ship that delivered parts for the atomic bomb and was then sunk by a Japanese submarine. What actor played Captain Charles McVeigh?
Okay, I haven't seen this one either, and I don't know anything about it.
Okay, well,
And
Mark and Jay will be very disappointed to hear that you don't know who's the main actor in this movie.
I don't even remember it. Like,
But
nothing about it.
does that
Nothing
hint
is
help at
ringing.
all, the fact that Mark and Jay would be very upset?
Mark and Jay would be upset because it's something that they both like and probably have talked about on
No,
their
well,
show or done on their
they like
show.
the actor.
Oh, well, that I don't know. I don't know. That actually sends me off in another direction entirely. Yeah, I have no idea. I'm sorry. This one I'm not getting any closer on. I appreciate your hints. I'm not getting there though. I can't remember this movie at all. Like, it's
Okay,
like a complete
I'll
utter
give you a
blank
hint. This
spot.
actor played a character who he won an Oscar for playing a character who drinks himself to death.
Oh, Nick
There you go,
Cage.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, I do. Now I'm curious about this. Is this, have you seen this
It's not
one?
that great. It's
Okay, so I'm not missing out. Okay,
better to listen to the story in Jaws about the USS Indianapolis, and that's it. You don't need to go this far and watch this movie.
yeah. And that's the first thing I think thought of when you brought it up. I'm like, are we talking about Jaws? Because that's not a war movie.
Well, it has
Oh, but that whole scene with Robert Shaw though is so good. That yeah, you don't need a
that's
movie
right.
about it. You just need
That's
Robert
right.
Shaw's
There
clip.
you go.
That's it.
All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel once again. Do it. So you see, you got 5 out of 5 on that one. I'm very, very impressed.
I will say 4 out of 5 because you really helped me on that last one.
Okay.
But if you want, put me down 5 out of 5. I'll take it. I've done so poorly so many times.
Well,
I'll
this
take
one
a
I don't
win.
think you're gonna get, but you can try. This is a movie from
Okay.
1962, starring William Holden and Lily Palmer, and he plays a Swedish oil trader working for the British Allies, spying for them.
And this was the 60s.
Yeah, 1962.
I think I spent all my 60s on the last episode guessing. So I'm just gonna say them ones I can think of again, even though they're not right. It's not the Dirty Dozen. It's not the Longest Day. Or Where Eagles Dare, because that was the Clint Eastwood, Richard Burton one. Which,
There
have
you
you
go.
seen that one?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Is that one I should see?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, because I love both of them, especially in that timeline. It's not Patton, it's not Sands of Iwo Jima, and those are like the 60s, 50s ish.
Okay.
I don't
So
know. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
the answer is The Counterfeit Trader.
Nope, haven't even heard of
It's
it.
a movie I've seen once, and I really liked it. I thought it was good. I don't remember if it was great, but it was pretty good. I probably should rewatch it. I saw it like 10 years ago, something like that.
All right. All right.
Which
Well,
means
I'm not mad about getting
thousands
that
and
wrong.
thousands of movies ago.
I don't know how you retain as much as you do when you absorb as much as you do. I read about 200 books on average a year, and I retain probably about half of them. The rest of them, I would have to go read some blurbs to get refreshed with
Okay,
it.
I'm the same way,
It's
depending on what they are. Depending on what movies they are. There are movies where I
yeah.
look at the title and I say, sounds so familiar, and then I look at it and I go, oh yeah, I saw this.
It's still impressive. It's still impressive. It's a lot. You retain a lot.
Thank you. All right, so
You're welcome.
Heather, would you like to tell everyone once again where they can find Heather Baxendale?
You can find me at heatherbaxendale.com. All of my goodies are there. If you are interested in fantasy, science fiction, adventure books, I write those. Those are on the website. You can find my podcast, Word of Hellmouth, on there. It is a buddy Buffy. It's a buddy. It's a Buffy rewatch show. We are in season four of Buffy right now, and we are watching in tandem with Angel season one as they cross over. And you can find all of my socials on there as well. And I'm not really active on any of them other than Instagram. So follow my Instagram if you're interested.
You follow you respond to me on Facebook, so there you
I respond on Facebook, but I don't spend time on Facebook except for my group header guard, where all my nerdy people are, and private messages, which I catch up on like once every 3 to 5 days.
go. Okay. Yes, I'm aware of that too. And
Yes.
finding
If I don't expect it, I'm not going to look for it.
okay,
Let's put it that
understandable,
way.
understandable. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Ramen. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieramen.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieramen@movieramen.net. So until tomorrow, Curhee!
Curhee!